Hi, welcome to another episode of Through the Web. Today we'll be talking about a range of topics, including the ban on TikTok, some really cool stuff to do with AI, so stay tuned for that. It's actually going to be pretty wild. And we'll be answering your questions. So yeah, let's get into it.
So Dagogo, how was your week?
Pretty chaotic. I had a bit of a medical emergency in my family. So if anyone's been through the whole burst spleen kind of deal, yeah, that's that's what happened to my mum, unfortunately. So it was it's a bit touch and go because she left it for quite a while. So it was a bit complicated. But she's recovering now and will make a full recovery. But yeah, if you feel a pain in your abdomen, definitely go straight away. And also, it also just kind of made me think about a few things. Like you know, back in the day when this would happen to people, they just die. That's it. Like there wasn't surgery. I'm talking about like hundreds of years ago. There wasn't really surgery to take care of it. So it's just that's it. That's kind of the end. So
yeah. Well, first of all, hopefully your mother gets on the recovery path quickly. And
she's doing better.
That's good to hear. And secondly, as you mentioned that like what happened in the past, the modern medicine is just incredible if you think about it. Like these little things that we think now we can't take for granted, like easily avoidable deaths in terms of just doing a surgery or even just the addition of some sort of medicine that completely has changed humanity. Yeah,
like penicillin, where you know little infections would be. Will be the end, but then when that came around, it really, transformed history essentially, and then also the polio vaccine and things like this. But it also made me think about the healthcare system and just the differences between hospitals, because the first place that she went was, you know, really under the strain. You could see that the nurses had no time, everyone was panicked and running around, there was just chaos. And then we moved her to a smaller hospital. Where it was totally different. Everyone was calm and, you know, everyone had time to really look after the patients. So you kind of think about that. And I've been hearing that since COVID around the world, it's been tough for healthcare industries. So just seeing that in person, like you can really feel it and sense it. It's kind of crazy because we have private health cover, right? But because there was just no beds, she had to share with other people, which... something that you wouldn't expect, but that's just the way it was. So, hopefully the staff shortages kind of fix themselves after a while, because healthcare is a really fundamental part of society. It's the backbone of all people's health and well-being. So, yeah, it just made me think about a lot of things in different contexts. But she's on the mend, and yeah, things will be up from here.
Oh, that's good to hear. But you're right about the healthcare side of things. I know quite a few doctors. One of them actually works at NHS in the UK, and he was there in one of the first respondents for all the COVID emergencies a couple of years back. And I'll be hearing stories of him just being absolutely wiped out after each day's shifts, right? And that again made me think. And right now, if those who aren't following, I think just a few weeks back, they had a whole strike about NHS's doctors making less money than a barista at Starbucks or something equivalent in the UK, right?
So the, really?
So like the entry level, I have to get to the specifics of which category of doctors or nurses, but essentially in the healthcare sector, if you worked at... as a barista in a specific cafe, you were making more than a lot of the people working at the NHS. And there was a big strike about it, I think just a couple of weeks back. So that paints a picture of how we really, not just treat, but how we value doctors and healthcare, at least in today's society. Because I remember growing up, I think obviously there are a lot of doctors who make a lot of money, but there's a vast majority who don't. And especially if you think of other countries as well, not just, you know, the UK or the Australia or the US, but think of, you know, in developing nations where healthcare is really scarce. Doctors there are spending so much more time, effort, and of course the money there is not as much as elsewhere. So yeah, I think it is going to be a serious problem in the future if you don't you know, pay attention to it.
Yeah, I don't know if I said it on this podcast, but over many, many years, I've just been saying over and over again, we have to focus on paying, like nurses, healthcare system. I didn't know doctors was a part of it. That obviously needs to be fixed. And also education. Like these two sectors are so fundamental to society. If you don't have education, you have no future. If you don't have healthcare, then, you know, if when you get into trouble, things can go south quite quickly. So I think, you know, funding a lot of, you know, pay rises and funding should definitely go to those sectors, I think. And not only that, it would attract, so for teachers, for example, you may get people now that go into teaching because they just don't know what else to do, or like they're just like, oh yeah, I'll just do this. They don't really have the passion. And those that do, they're dealing with like overcrowded classrooms, and then you have like the underpay issue. But if you did pay them more, then I'm sure it would attract a better cohort of people. I'm not saying that teachers are bad, but it's just, you know, just the some of the issues that my dad is a teacher and some of the issues that he sees. And also I have some teacher friends and things like that. So it's just, I think it's just fundamentally has to change. But where that direction is going to come from, there's not really an incentive, but there have been strikes for teachers. Teachers recently, there was strikes here, and then obviously the NHS. So there is pressure, but it seems like it's just not really happening that quickly. So don't know what's up with that.
Even at the early stages of early childhood, because, you know, I've seen strikes there as well with daycare centers not having enough people. And I think COVID really amplified all of that, because they already were under a lot of stress, but then times hit with the global pandemic, people's changing behavior, society's changing behavior. It really took a toll on this healthcare sector, the education sector, because they're like, why am I doing this if I'm not even paid well, and then I have to like take up all this extra stress on my life. So you're right. I think these things definitely need to be sorted. But again, how do you go about that? Because again, if you ask, at least in the modern days, like do you want to become to young kids? None of them are going to say teachers and doctors.
Well, in China, they'll say doctors and engineers, but in the Western society, it's all TikTokers and YouTubers. But that's another thing. But I was going to say, like, I thought you were going to ask who's going to pay for it.
Right.
But then in Australia here, we have hundreds of billions of dollars going towards nuclear submarines. That was a complete kerfuffle. I also heard they cut homeless, not subsidies, but like, yeah.
I saw the thing this morning.
Yeah, so we've got a huge homeless crisis. We're importing hundreds of thousands of people that need a place to stay. Rents are doubling everywhere, and then government's like, "Yeah, more submarines. That's what we need." But that's another rant. Anyway, how you been?
I mean, it wasn't as chaotic as you had imagined, but okay. I guess a bit of the changing weather's kicking my sinuses up. So again, just sticking to that whole health-related issues at the start of the podcast, but it's not bad. I'm alive coping. And well, and I'm coping, as I said. Nothing much of significance in terms of life updates. Anything you watched interesting this week? You've had the time to?
Yeah, no, I did. I needed to unwind a bit, so I watched quite a few things. Okay. But there's a billion, but I'm going to maybe give two options and I'll see what you think is more interesting. So Unreal Engine updates. There's they had a bit of a game developers conference and showcased some crazy stuff. And the other one was the Nothing Ear 2 earphones. There was a presentation about that.
Yeah, so I actually have the second one as part of one of the topics we want to cover. Let's do the first one.
Sure. So Unreal Engine, they unveiled their 5.2 update. So essentially, building on the crazy stuff that they've had already, they showcased some world building, and they did it in a very interesting way. So, you know the Rivian electric vehicle company?
Yes.
So they actually use Unreal Engine for some of their 3D rendering when it comes to like parking sensors and like viewing your car from the outside. You know how sometimes you can like click a button and then you can see like your car from a external point of view. I don't know if you've seen that. So for the rendering engine, they use Unreal Engine. So in this showcase, they put a highly detailed model of a Rivian electric vehicle, like the Ute, and they drove it through this environment, and everything was like done to the T. Like the suspension was like modeled, and the electric whine of the engines was like sampled from the Rivian vehicle, and it looks so cool. But that wasn't really the point. They showcased some pearlescent pearl paint. So it wasn't pearls, opal. So like, you know how opal, when you crush it up and put it on a surface, it reflects light in a very unique way. So they detailed all of that and it just looked real. Like there was no, and this kind of thing previously would have taken a whole bunch of compute power to do, but it was all real time because they managed to do their Unreal magic once again. So it was really cool looking. But then the coolest thing that caught the crowd that was watching this by surprise, and myself as well, is they showcased the procedural nature of generating environment. So they drove the Rivian through this jungle scene. It had rocks and like overhanging trees. And then they described that this was like painstakingly made by the artists and it was very hard to do. But then they said, from here on, it's procedurally generated. So it was this vast area, like everything looked as detailed as what was before. Mm. But then the artist, they're like, oh, so if you wanted to place like a rock face here, you can just plonk it there. So he did it. And then everything else just like quickly came to like mold around it. And it just looked like it had been hand done as well. Wow. And then you can move that instantly. And you can also just say, I want more trees. I want less trees. And then it intelligently knows where to place everything. So it's like, again, cutting off a whole chunk of game building time. So they've already done it with the nanite stuff and the lumen, but then this was just another level. So when they did the first click and everything morphed into where it should be, the crowd just like all gasped and clapped. And I was like, yeah, that is cool. So they're just so far ahead, I think, in terms of game development. And not only that, like Unreal Engine's being used in a bunch of movies and, you know, different, obviously the Rivian example again. So it's not just games anymore. This is seriously real-time 3D art, I guess. Mm. So that was really cool to witness. Cool. That was probably one of the coolest things I watched. And there was a bunch of others, but they're irrelevant.
I got to watch that as well.
Yeah, now, how about you?
Well, before I jump into what I watched, I just want to quickly fix a story that I mentioned last episode. There was a bit of technical errors in that one that I realized later on. So, you know, the story that I told about was 10 films that were done on Premiere Pro that won the Oscars or nominated for Oscars.
Yes.
So it was 10 films that use Adobe, not specifically Premiere Pro. But having said that, Everything Everywhere All at Once used entirely Premiere Pro. Mm-hmm. Top Gun and everything else, they used some of the Adobe Adobe's elements, not just Premiere Pro. Just wanted to clear that out. just in case, you know.
people.
Yeah, exactly. What did I watch this week? One thing that did caught a lot of my attention was this op-doc by New York Times, basically, you know, opinion documentary. And it's about the Iraq war 20 years later. So basically they had initial footages of a lot of the soldiers who were deployed on the ground.
I think I'll save that to my watch later, but I haven't watched it. But yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to ruin it. Like, there's nothing to spoil, really.
Yeah.
But essentially, it was a really well-made documentary in terms of just seeing the impact wars have on... I mean, obviously, it has a significant impact on the people, on innocent civilians that, or the place where the war is held, but also on the soldiers who are, in most of the times, which are just sent there without much knowledge of what they're getting into, especially because they are very, very young. You know, like one of the soldiers there was 19 at the time, and his footage at that time of the war is like, oh, I'm 19. This is the coolest thing you can do. Like, he was really hyped up to get in there and be involved in basically, you know, killing people and stuff like that. So, and now this New York Times had tracked him down and did an interview with him now, and just his thoughts about, you know, that side of him that he left behind versus where he's right now, and just the contrast in how these veterans essentially think as to what the war was and how they react to it. Just very eye-opening, right? For anyone who, whether or not, you know, you're leaving a political bias aside, it's an incredible watch just to see the realness of what war can do to the human beings. Obviously, you see the graphic images and stuff that come out in the newspapers, but you hardly ever see people telling the stories from their perspective of those who are involved. So, yeah, it was a very, very good, well-made documentary.
I've got a couple of things on that point. I've heard a lot about, you know, starting from Second World War, Korean War, Vietnam War, just what happens when these people who fought and saw it like we're on the front lines get back into society.
Mm.
It's just, you know, it's hard for the human body to have like be under constant threat and have adrenaline pumping through and like danger at any time. Sometimes confusion, seeing people die, having to make the decision to kill people, and then being thrown back into society, and you know, you're just supposed
to normal life.
Yeah, you're supposed. But I think it was probably the worst for the Vietnam soldiers, because when they got back, the public hated them. Mm. Like they were just like, this was a horrible war. Like, and then they saw like what was happening with some of the Viet Cong and like in terms of like the torturing and stuff. So there was a lot of, and like they were kind of just ostracized even after going through all of that. So I just couldn't imagine what life would be like after that. It must be horrible. So yeah, just on that topic. But also another thing I watched was a guy who survived falling 22 stories during the 9/11 attacks. Wow. So he was, you know, having a meeting or something, yeah, on one of the floors, maybe 50th floor or something, when the plane hit. And he and his cohort were like, okay, we've got to get out of here. So they started running down the stairs, through the stairwells, and then they came into contact with firefighters that were going up, but the, you know, the, they were extremely exhausted because they were carrying this gear and all these flights of stairs, and it was getting hard to breathe. So they were taking a rest when they went past. They continued going, and then there was this massive shaking because the building was starting to come down. So this guy jumped into the corner of the stairwell and like hid there. And essentially all he knew was there's just massive shaking, all this dust and everything. And then before he knew it, he was on the ground, basically on this slab of concrete, and below him was just this gaping hole with flames. And then he could just see like a blue sky kind of thing. And so he was just, he thought that at that moment he was going to come out of his body and see himself there, because he thought he was dead. Mm. It was like, there's no way I could have survived this. So as it turns out, all he had was a broken ankle. So the firefighters were, you know, starting to get to the scene where he was, like maybe an hour later or something. And he was calling out for help. And then the firefighter was like, oh, what do you need? Like, that's the first thing he said. Because he thought that this guy was another firefighter that had just climbed up to this area and was stuck. But it's like, no, I'm a survivor. And they're like, what? So yeah, they got him down and everything. And yeah, he was just telling this story and recounting how it happened. And it was just absolutely amazing, like that someone could survive such an incident. But the thing is the psychological damage that happened to him afterwards, because he had like survivor's guilt. Mm. Because I think he was with 8 other people and there was one other lady that survived, but everyone else that he was with at that time obviously didn't. So he was kind of like, why me? And yeah, his wife was also interviewed and just telling how different of a person he was for a while afterwards. Because he was, you know, the wife was like, why, you know, you should be happy. Obviously, you've gone through something traumatic, but the wife was pregnant at the time and gave birth. So it was kind of like, this is, we should focus on the child. But he was kind of like, still reeling from it, and he just wanted to suppress it and go back to work. So he did. He only took like 3 weeks off, went straight back to work.
That's incredible.
But then at that workplace, someone mentioned the name of someone who had passed away, saying, oh, he probably should have done this better. Yeah. And he just snapped. And then he's like, I need some help. I need to talk to someone. So he did, but yeah, eventually he got better, but it was just, an incredible story. So
Just probabilities as well of survival.
Yeah, right? It's like that little one pocket out of everything is probably the only place you could have been.
You hear stuff like that as well, and you know the recent earthquake that happened in Turkey.
Mm.
Lots of, you know, obviously people died, but then there's, you hear stories like this when just a couple of people just surviving underneath this piles of rubbles of just 3 days, 5 days, 7 days, right? Or even like other cases. So yeah, just the idea of probability and randomness of life, really. Very, very crazy. So very, very dark, deep start to the podcast. We've gone really different ways this time around, from healthcare to randomness of life. I mean, the only good thing there is probably the Premiere Pro update that I had, that, you know what, we can still hit on Premiere Pro because it didn't feature all 10 of the movies.
It probably crashed too much to do that. Yeah. So.
But look, we'll carry on to one of the perhaps the biggest story this week. It was the TikTok ban situation, in terms of the CEO being grilled by the Congress yesterday, who seems more than determined to ban TikTok than ever, really.
Sorry, seems what?
More like very determined to ban.
Oh, okay.
Because in terms of like unison between Democrats and Republicans, I'm not that much into U.S. politics, but from the commentary that I've been seeing, that they haven't seen this much togetherness surrounding one specific topic where everyone just agrees that, yep, TikTok should be banned. But essentially, yesterday, almost like 5 hours, the CEO, Xu Zhiqiu, was asked different kinds of questions, some very interesting, to say the least. The one about the Wi-Fi was... Yeah.
I think Marcus Brownlee tweeted... basically tech support on steroids because they're asking all these simple old people questions.
Yeah, I haven't seen the full 5 hours, obviously, but I saw some interesting parts out of it. But yeah, like what are your thoughts overall around the thing? Because I know what your thoughts are, but I just wanted to go on record.
I've been on record. I think it's going to happen. Obviously, the United States takes a threat this big, or even a potential threat this big to national security, very seriously. So I know you say they can't ban it because TikTok is so fundamental, it's integrated into all of this stuff, but I think that just doesn't matter from a political...
No, but the thing is, it just seems like, especially after watching the whole, I don't know, what do you call it?
Senate hearing? Or
yeah, the hearing, yeah. Essentially. It seemed like they've already made up their minds, right? Like they're not here to listen to the CEO. They're just here to basically, go at him, let out all their rage that they've built up over on TikTok or whatever else that's been going in their households on this one individual. Because that's what it seemed like to me, is just ripping him apart in any chance that they got. And as they should in a hearing like this. But it seems to me like whenever something like this happens, they've already made up their mind. They're not here to listen to him. They're just here to just have a go at that individual. And essentially throughout the whole 4 or 5 hours, it just seemed like whenever he would even answer correctly, they'd be like, oh, that's just preposterous. Even though there was like no evidence, even up to now, like, yeah, there's a national security threat only because it's China, who's got the main headquarters with the company that owns TikTok, ByteDance. Yeah. But other than that, there's very limited evidence that Chinese Communist Party has direct access to data of the users of TikTok in the US. Nothing's been proven. He's been asked directly a few times and he said, yep, there's no... I think there's only one instance where a few engineers had access to some legacy user data of the US, but that was like a few years ago. Yeah, I think TikTok even came up with a response to that. And rest of the conversation during that hearing was about mental health, about the algorithm that serves certain things, destroying kids and their image of themselves, and so the whole security threat was part of it, but the rest of the stuff is essentially what every other social media has been criticized for. Mm. So it seemed to me like they're just using that one thing to really pile on all the other things that every other social media is accused of, and then just using that as a way to get rid of TikTok.
Yeah. So are you saying that TikTok is, so, Facebook's privacy violations or whatever, are you saying that TikTok is less than that?
I have no way of knowing it, but I know for a fact that all of the other companies are just as...
Let's just say for a fact... I mean, say for argument's sake, that TikTok is as bad as Facebook and all of these other social media companies in terms of harvesting user data, etc.
Yeah.
The difference between TikTok and these other companies is that those other companies are US-based. So that data will be used for serving ads, maybe some political manipulation and some social, discourse and But for TikTok, I think the risk is so much higher because it's a foreign government entity that if they did have access to all of this data, they could do irreparable harm, essentially. I think it's just the idea of that risk, that small chance of that risk they just don't want to take.
I was reading this tweet thread as well, where they're saying that how a lot of the social media companies that we have now have initial seed funding from
Russia,
from Saudis, right? Yep. So all that kind of stuff, again, is not really looked at because, again, these are quote-unquote American companies, just because TikTok has that one angle. Now,
seed funding.
True. But having said that, the CEO did say that they're going to move all the data to the U.S., so they're calling it the Project Texas, which one of the congressmen said, you know, let's call it something else because we don't want you here. Yeah, stuff like that.
It's okay, just, well, look, yeah, that's a little whatever.
Yeah, but overall, the responses were that, you know, we will do everything we can to actually make it an American based not a company, because I don't know if they're going to sell it, but all the information, all the data would be moved towards to US. I think there's one in Virginia and one in Singapore where they have a lot of the data stored. So they're going to they've said that they're going to delete it by the end of the year, and then make a migration process towards moving everything to the US soil. Right. So those things that he is saying that we want to do, like, I'm here because we want to be transparent. We want to be as legal as possible to be doing these things. But again, those responses and things like that, just seems like they've
made their mind.
They've made their mind, right? And they don't want to hear anything else. Mm. And again, based on no specific evidence.
Okay, the thing is, you're saying no specific evidence, but has there been zero? I think there has been some.
Other than the engineers in ByteDance who had some access, I can't think of any specific ones. And also the idea that, you know, Facebook and Google cannot be manipulated by any other third party.
I think Facebook and Google, the government's already manipulating them. So they're happy. Like, they've got
a lot of people saying there's been some behind the
The CIA and Google are best buddies. Google's actually literally a contractor for them. Mm. So it's like, they don't care, they're happy. Mm. But I think they just don't want another country spying. It's just like, this is our, we're supposed to do that. I think it's something like that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, jokes aside, it does seem like it's definitely heating up. A couple of times, quite a few amount of times, the CEO of TikTok said that there's 150 million active users per month. That's almost half the population of users, or something like that, which again, is an incredible number. Right, 150 million active users is a lot, and it was 100 million in 2020. So in 3 years, they've almost
50%.
Yeah, 50% increase. Right, so things like that. And there was one interesting part where he said that you know, with all due respect, American companies don't have a great track record with data. Just look at Facebook and Cambridge and the Cambridge situation. So he kind of like said it straight away. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. Where, you know, he wasn't holding back either. That, you know, you've got some issues here as well, but just because there's some sort of a linkage to a country that you may not like right now, and that's the key part, like right now, because 10, 15 years from now, that changes as well with international relations, right?
Yeah.
So
I think I have to do some more digging specifically into maybe even just the claims of what the fears are. But, you know, I have heard, you know, a couple of years ago that situation between the United States-based arm of TikTok and the Chinese-based overseer, like there was some siloing happening where the people working here couldn't have access to certain things or weren't allowed to get past certain barriers, essentially. So that's as much as I know and as I can remember. But yeah, this wasn't just some random, you know, this was like a full-on report. So I know there were some things going on, but I don't know to what degree. But I just think American politicians and the government is just trying to play it safe.
For sure. But I guess the bigger problem is also, I think a lot of people are saying, oh, TikTok can just sell themselves to an American buyer. But then who's going to buy is also a question, right? Especially in this economy where everything's a bit haywire. So I don't think it's that easy a route out for them either, where they can just, you know, here's get another Elon and then...
But yeah, it would kind of be a for sale kind of thing. But
yes.
I guess it just depends on the price. If it's $10, I'm sure someone will take
$10
it.
$10, okay. an old headache that comes with it. So
he wouldn't even take the whole of TikTok for $10.
Dude, it's like if I'm being grilled like that for 5 hours in front of the whole world.
No, but you can just be like, I'm an Australian citizen. Don't worry about me.
Fair enough. So yeah, moving on to another topic of that just came out, I think, yesterday. Hindenburg's new target. So tech billionaire and co-founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, is facing scrutiny after a report accuses Block, which is one of the companies previously known as Square. It's a payments company that he led. The accusations are that he's been inflating user numbers and catering to criminals even. So essentially the whole thing, the reports come out saying that former employees described how Cash App, which is a payments app within the Block company, has suppressed internal concerns and ignored user pleas for help as criminal activity and fraud ran rampant on its platform. This appeared to be an effort to grow Cash App's user base by strategically discarding anti-money laundering rules. More details on that is coming up, but the shares, as soon as this came out, tumbled 15%. It's kind of rose up a little bit, but Blocks said that it's going to reject all claims and they might even take some legal actions against Hindenburg. So yet another Hindenburg story.
Yeah, so I guess some viewers were wondering where Hindenburg has been after the Adani case, and they pop up again. So there you go. But in terms of this, you know, Cash App facilitating fraud. What about WhatsApp? Like, how many scammers are there? funneling people towards crypto scams. So I know Cash App is actually the transfer mechanism and WhatsApp's just a platform, but I think in most places, you're going to get scam transactions with the good transactions. I think it's just the nature of cryptocurrencies these days, sadly. So I don't know how much hangs on that claim, how valid it is, but I think if Block knowingly knew that this was going on and users and also management or whoever was seeing this happen and they didn't do anything about it, then maybe that's another case, but I don't know. I guess we have to wait and see what happens here. What
would
do you think?
Be as big as the whole Adani and perhaps, you know, the whole Nikola situation in the past?
I don't think it's that big. So it's not so much. I think Nikola was the highest case because there's no product. Yeah. I think that's another level. But this just seems like a bit of mismanagement, maybe willingly trying to make things look a little better than they were, because. Yeah, even Twitter, in terms of the fake users and trying to make things look better than they were, I think Twitter was even doing some of that. I think that's what Elon accused them of when he was going to buy them. So it's not unusual. It's not good, but it's not worth like taking down a whole company for, I think. That's just my opinion.
Which also means that probably no Cold Fusion videos on it anytime soon.
Nope.
That's what most of the listeners are worrying. Oh, when do I get another fraud story? But I think it's because it's Jack Dorsey. That's why it's getting a lot more attention and traction. Big week for AI.
Whew. Yeah.
Do you want to get on that side of things?
I don't know where to start.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. So I guess maybe the biggest one, GPT-4 was released. Definitely a step above GPT-3. But yeah, essentially it's just been released and people are going wild with it. And a couple of days ago, they just integrated external plugins. Mm-hmm. So you can have, it connects with like Wolfram Alpha, like the maths thing. It connects with all these different programs. So you can just have the power of GPT-3, but like straight integrated into these apps that you already know. So that was pretty huge. And then I think it was yesterday, Microsoft engineers came out with a report, and this was like a bombshell. They essentially stated that GPT-4 is showing early signs, or they called it sparks, of AGI, so artificial general intelligence. And so this is essentially human-level general intelligence doing pretty much every task better than a human. So they're saying it's not quite there, but it's like, yeah, parts of it and For me, this is like a thing that was supposed to come in 20 years' time. There was a bunch of experts saying, you know, before this latest AI pump, like 2 or 3 years ago, they were saying that's a ways off. It's not going to happen. But now they've wrote a paper saying, like, yeah, we believe that it's kind of here, almost here. Aside from that, Google released Bard, so their version of their chatbot, but people have been quite underwhelmed with it. I've seen some screenshots of some ridiculous mistakes. I could pull up one here. It's not looking good. So someone asked Google Bard, if I'm going 8 miles per hour, how many hours will it take me to go 8 miles? And then Google Bard responds, 12.5 miles. It's not even the right unit. So people are very disappointed with its performance compared to where it's even worse than, according to these people anyway, I haven't used it, but it's even worse than ChatGPT-3.
Right.
So it's like years behind.
Yeah, I mean,
but I think Google can
leapfrog. Yeah, because it's only available to the US and the UK. Mm-hmm. Well, some users and they've explicitly mentioned from what I saw when I tried getting in that it's in the very early stages. There's going to be some problems here and there, so we're trying to solve that. So I think they're taking that really slow, methodical approach as opposed to being in ChatGPT just going one after the other.
But if you're seeing some of the things that GPT-4 can do,
this is years behind.
Yeah, like in terms of like literal, and it's not just, oh, this seems really good. It's like you're testing this on hard tests, like. Mm. You know, obviously the bar exam, but there's another test that they did in this paper. It's actually called the hindsight neglect problem, which is a decision-making exercise that, you know, shows like humans will do like a certain percentage well on this. And for comparison, GPT-3.5 got a score near, let's say, 20%.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes 0 to 100. And then guess what GPT-4 was? 100.
Wow.
Perfect score. Incredible. So it's like, that's the difference we're talking about. And in terms of reasoning, there was some, can't remember what it was. It was some human test that humans do as well. And humans. No. It can do that as well, but that's not it. But humans get about 95%. The last GPT was like, yeah, somewhere like 50% or lower. And then this one was the same as a human, just like 0.1% under. So it's like, yeah, it's now, good.
I was listening to a different podcast where they said, and I have to verify this, but apparently I think it was Captcha that the GPT-4 couldn't do. But what it did was instead...
Hired someone.
Yeah. It went to something like Fiverr or...
It was called...
Taskbreaker or something?
Tasker or something. But I've got it in the script. But yeah,
right, yeah. So it needed to hire an actual human to solve it for it.
It actually lied and said it was blind.
Exactly.
So it needed some help with it. But that's not particularly true because I've seen GPT-4... I should test, but I've seen GPT-4 on some captures, like where's the bicycle or whatever, and it
could do it.
Yeah, so right. I think it just depends on the case. Maybe it's not, its vision isn't 100% yet. But I think these kinds of things are they've arrived way before expected.
Mm.
And Google seriously has some catching up to do. Obviously, they invented the technology behind this thing, but because they've had such a lag in testing, whereas Microsoft's just like, oh, we'll get it out there, we'll learn really quickly. It's like the whole Zuckerberg move fast and break things. And then Google's saying, we've got such a big reputation here. We don't want to screw this up.
And I think that's why they're kind of almost underdogs in this case because they are not being able to go as fast as Microsoft, right? Mm. Because Microsoft didn't have that reputation as big as Google when it came to search, so they could just test it out. But I think where Microsoft also did, is ahead is because their product is actually superior, right? Mm. So at the time of release, it's significantly better than anything else out there. So they had that advantage. So it's not just learning things on the go. They didn't have anything else to compare themselves against, and therefore but Google, they now have GPT-4 being compared to.
Mm.
So now they're kind of struggling in that front. But as you mentioned, I think it'll take like a little bit more time, but they can match that.
Yeah.
I mean, even the Bard presentation where they were showing how they had the use on the Google Workspace. That's the stuff we kind of predicted was going to happen. That's already happening. I'm a big Google user. I use Drive all the time. That kind of stuff I can easily see. So I actually wouldn't even move from Google to to the Office 365.
Because it's coming already.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
But I think this is going to be a hot take here, but I think what a lot of people may not realize is that Microsoft is in the lead. Then there's a few other companies maybe, but we don't really know about them yet. But then there's Google. But I think there's going to be this huge wave of smaller companies being able to do this. Mm. And this is for two reasons. Number one, the cost of actually training these models just fell dramatically. I think it was, it was Stanford. They came out with a model called Alpaca, which mm-hmm. is a language model itself apparently. And they just did something incredible. So to train an AI like GPT costs about $4 million. With this new Alpaca model, guess how much they got it down to?
$27.
$600. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's $4 million.
I was just joking.
Yeah, no. Yeah, $4 million to $600 to train. That is crazy. And the thing is, this was supposed to take 8 years to get to this level, and it happened in like 5 weeks. This is the speed we're talking about.
Oh, God.
So a lot of companies are going to be able to do this. And then NVIDIA threw their hat in the ring and they said, hey, we're going to actually, what's it called? Foundations, it's called. So NVIDIA released Foundations. And essentially what it is it makes all these companies who don't have the time to completely train AI, just giving them the tools to like put their own data in. And then it's a straight Smart. Pipeline to make whatever you want based on your data. So it's just all these companies are building all these different tools. It's like the infrastructure of a highway or maybe like a fiber optic cables or whatever. This company's doing all of this, so it makes it easy for other companies to build on top of that.
And that's a smart move if you really want to be the winner out of all this, because again, going back to the
it's like if gold it's in mine, a gold rush, don't yeah. go for the gold, be a shovel seller. Or
exactly.
Whatever.
I mean, the Levi's became a brand of such magnitude during the gold rush. Mm. But again, if you're comparing it with that today, what are the companies that are complementing this gold rush, mm. right? They're the ones going to be who are doing it. And it sounds like NVIDIA is one of them going for that route.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, above that though, it just feels like in the next couple of years, this is going to be
weeks.
Yeah. Who knows, man? Like, yeah, just the last 2 weeks were insane. And yeah, so Adobe also came out. Mm. They're releasing a image generator. So, yeah, apparently it can change the weather in your film, a lot of other stuff. But I just think it's just that time where we'll just have to see really what comes around the corner. There could just be something that's the killer app, yeah. and it just makes it Fortune 500 company out of nowhere. Maybe, I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think it will, because already, I mean, despite the actual things that will eventually pop up, you are also getting all these, you know, scams that are coming out of the old GPT stuff, which is generally a sign that there's a bigger, almost a Cambrian explosion that's happening, right? Like all these things are like, oh, get a GPT. There's like GPT-4 courses or ChatGPT yeah. courses. I saw this guy selling like 500 prompts that he came up with, and he's selling it for like $10. Mm. So these aren't necessarily scams, but what I'm trying to say is when
like industries around industries.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the true tell sign of when things are really gaining traction is when you hear random people talking about it in the cafe. Mm. Just happened last week.
Oh, really?
I was just they're just in Vic Park. I was just meeting up with a friend, and just a table across, there was like it was around mid lunchtime. So clearly they're like, you know, from work. Like a company around that they're working at, took a lunch break. So three or four colleagues, they're talking about ChatGPT the entire time. Like, I did this on ChatGPT.
Right.
You said GPT-4 coming. So even those buzzwords now, just everywhere.
The thing is so funny, because I remember doing a video on GPT-3, like before ChatGPT came out. It was like a year before that.
I remember.
Yeah. So I was talking about like how it worked and like, you know, word prediction, everything. But in my head, I was like, I wish they called it something more catchy, because no one's going to remember this. It's not going to really catch on. But I think it's just that good.
Exactly.
That everyone.
So it's now, again, where Google is going to lose out on, because that when something's that good, like you use it as a verb. Mm. So just Google it. Let's Uber it.
Just GPT it.
So in that case, can you, I don't know, like just run across GPT or something. Yeah. I don't know however that's going to shape out. But you're right. I think it is that good. And that's why people are not struggling to even
Remembering. But on that note, so you saw these two people that were probably professional workers. Yes. They were talking about using GPT. There's a study that came out, I think it was MIT, and essentially it's kind of the first real data that we're getting back, like good, strong mm-hmm. study, showing just how much it can do for, you know, the professional environment. So I think the statistic was 20... far out. Okay, that's right. So if you use ChatGPT, this must have been 3 or 3.5, on average, compared to a control group that didn't use it in their daily work, this was across a lot of multiple fields, 20% more output, and tasks took half the time and the quality increased by 20%. Mm-hmm. So that's massive. And this is just at this early stage. And it's like you have this tool here for free. If you told someone this like 5 years ago, you could just go online for free, use this tool in any job that you're doing or most jobs, and it'll do your task in half the time and your output and quality increased by 20%. What do you think they're going to say? It's like, get out of here.
Even 6 months ago, right? Like nobody was talking about ChatGPT, GPT-4 kind of stuff. Well, we were in this podcast. I remember like in November, we were talking about it. It's like, oh, this is going to change everything. Yeah. And even the GPT-3 stuff, I remember you were talking about.
I'm going to actually find out when I did that video.
It's probably like last year. The year before.
Yeah, like because it was real. I was like, this is kind of crazy. But
yeah, but it didn't gain that much traction in terms of people talking about it. So I think the practicality of use is also important in these
things. I think the chat version, yes. Like that's when it really, because like I think for most things, if you just make the barrier lower, then people just...
And I think it's also going to get to a point where we'll be desensitized to it. And I think we're slowly getting to that level
I agree.
I'm through this podcast, I mentioned like I get to news a lot earlier than I used to in the past, right? So when I break some of this news to my friends, they're like, oh, that like happens anywhere, right? Like, oh, you can search for that. And you've got Bing that does that. So I think that mentality is already setting in.
Where it'll be like, people will just be like, well, computers could always talk, couldn't they? And I think, yeah, we're getting to that stage. But I think about the next generation though, like growing from the people born now, the babies born now, they're growing up in a world where it's like computers always talked.
Yeah.
You could just always write something,
you always have an assistant.
Speak something and it could generate a movie. That was always how it was. And it's just like, wow. What will they be shocked by?
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
That's such a great question. Like, what will they be shocked by?
What's left? What is left?
Even flying cars would be like, oh.
Yeah, it's like designed by AI. Eh, that was done years ago.
Yeah, maybe they'll be shocked by authenticity because everything around is
like,
so...
It's like, wow, you can use a hand to draw something? What?
No more fake Mid-Journey. Speaking of which...
Oh, yes. Mid-Journey version 5.
Version 5 and the fake Trump photos that came out.
I think that was a breakout moment because... If there was this, well, just for that little, it's like a micro story, yes. Right? Just for that little time when Trump was saying, hey, I'm going to be arrested tomorrow. And then all these photos of him running away from police officers.
One of those like had Biden by the side. The one that I showed you has Biden on the side.
Yeah. But it's like, they look pretty good. Like, I think if you're elderly, you'll just be like, oh, that's him. You know?
The thing is, when somebody forwarded them to me, it was the first thing I saw like early in the morning when I woke up. And I was like the first glance was like, oh, what's happening? Like it wasn't the first reaction wasn't, oh, these are fake photos. The first reaction was like, oh, something's happening, right? And then like it took me maybe a couple seconds to kind of, you know, get my bearings right. And they're like, oh, okay, it's actually, you know, like fake photos of Trump being arrested.
The thing is, it's like there's something about it where it's like, maybe it's the ridiculousness of it. If it was something more subtle,
true.
Maybe it would take longer to be like, this is a fake photo. Because obviously him by himself running away from guards with guns, I think that's just... And I think it's an orange jumpsuit.
He was. There's different versions of it. And it's just, yeah, some of it was just hilarious. But overall, I think you're right that this was a moment where a lot of the media is also kind of turning the heads that, oh, this is... how you can actually use it for fake photos for propaganda and but again, we've been talking about this for months and months, and this is the first kind of, let's say, soft moment as to how it was used, and I guess that opens up the questions to how nefarious the serious cases when and not if but when it'll actually happen, and it'll be very very soon in my opinion.
Ah, okay, so I found the GPT-3 video. October 14th, 2020.
Oh, wow.
That's when I first talked about this. And people like, this isn't real. This can never happen.
It would be cool. Like, once we get to the new studio, we should go through that video, react to the comments, and just compare, like, what people's, like, headspace was at that time looking at this versus now.
Yeah.
Pretty much 3 years in comparison.
Yeah. It's wild. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. Like, what's next? What's the next big AI thing that seems impossible now but can be, that will be done? Because everything, in my mind, just on first impressions, everything seems like there's a path to it.
Mm.
Like, if you're talking about a movie being created, it's like, yeah, like, in a few years I can see that happening. But what's the thing where you think it's impossible and then it can be done? Like, what do you
think? I think we talked about the Jetsons example of a physical assistant, robotic assistant with a chat GPT like interactivity, right? Mm. I think something like that is still far away from us, not far away in the sense that it's not perfectly made or consumer friendly, where I can just go to Kmart and get me an assistant for $20, right? That once that happens, you know, like that's it, end game. But to that level of retail consumer products or making it that much commercial is perhaps the next big frontier.
So in terms of it being possible at all, Google's actually made some inroads into that. So they built, it was their Palm AI system language model built with something else where it was vision recognition and it could learn to, I did a video on this. So like, yeah, it was a kind of like a robotic system where it could learn your sentence, understand, break that down into tasks and understand what to do. But obviously it's still very limited in learning. But I think that kind of thing, we'll be seeing a lot more of that. I think with these language models being almost general purpose now.
I don't think it's going to be shocking enough, because if I just tell someone that, oh, there's going to be a robot assistant cleaning up my house, like, oh, we've got that freaking, what do you call it?
Roomba.
that already does that for me. So what are your, so I think, and by the time those things become commercial, the lag time between the news breaking out versus it being, you know, available at the shelves at Kmart, that lag time would be enough for people to not be shocked anymore. Mm. So again, I can't really think of anything that's going to be drastically crazy for us to shock us.
I think maybe AI designing physical things, like, so you could say, make me a blah, 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 blah. It's attached to a 3D printer. Mm. Somehow you've got some kind of polymers and whatever, and it can just like create it. And it's perfect. I think that would be shocking.
Because a lot of the applications right now, from what I can see, would be people, you know, making their own businesses using GPT-4, coming up with everything from logos to layouts to website designs to coding. All that can be done through just a few AI tools now, or even existing programs using those APIs. So to be very, very shocking for us, I can't. Because even like just today, I was listening to Linus. Hopefully he's recovered from his hacking situation. For those who don't know, his whole thing got hacked and was promoting crypto scams by Elon Musk.
We'll get
back to my point in a second. But go on.
I was just like, for Linus, like, he's the top tech guy. Yeah. I just wonder how that happened. I'll be interested to know, but.
Yeah, hopefully he talks about it in his next podcast and stuff. But yeah, in the one before all that happened, they're talking about how would it be possible for them to sell, not only sell, for them to create a product, sell it, market it, and essentially have the whole thing built out from the perception to the payment point and the delivery, with them not even having a look at it. So telling the GPT-4 to just do something. So the way it'll work is, what if they gave their entire data set of their customers, fed it into the system, said that I want to make a product that you think will be the best, you know, they'll give them historical data, what was the best-selling product, come up with an idea that would be the next best-selling product, come up with it, contact maybe, you know, the people who build it for you, create a whole system, create a landing page, get the pay. And apparently OpenAI is partnering up with Stripe, the payment company. So that would be simple enough if that does happen. The whole payment gateway will be simple, and partnering up with Amazon or whatever too for the delivery side of things. And without Linus or any of the team members even looking at what it is.
So I was reading a a Twitter thread about prompt engineering, essentially. Mm-hmm. And there was like three steps to make sure that you get the best out of your AI. And I think the first one was be very specific with the mm-hmm. objective. The second one was, I can't remember. And the third one was basically give it a list of things what not to do, essentially. So, the second one was about specificity as well. But essentially, if you do that, I think that the overall thinking was these chat programs aren't so, well, they're not strong in just like inferencing and thinking. Mm. They're good at doing. Mm. So if you tell it exactly what to do and give it lots of steps on that, then it can do. So I don't think what Linus hypothesized will be out of the realms of possibility within 2 years.
2 weeks. Every time you give me this timeline, I'm breaking it down to like...
I'm just being very, very generous. Because like, imagine if the errors and the weird things that you get from there are just like so obscure. It's like, okay, make me this product, blah, blah, blah. And it does so, but then like 1 out of every 100 is like a puppy dog for some reason.
and I think that's where some level of human intervention and supervision will be required, because data sets can be extremely misleading, right? Mm. Especially when it comes to audience data, or like how many percentage are female versus male, where they're located. You've got VPN, all that kind of stuff. So again, maybe all of your crowds, in a specific country, but then they're logging in using VPN, and therefore, so now if you tell the data to be read that they like certain products, but then it's essentially just a pure stereotype of a different geography location, then it's like useless, what are they getting, you know?
Yeah, but then again, like humans would be looking at that data if they were going to put that into their analysis. So
yeah, but then they'll take that into consideration. So again, like, unless they're very specific.
But the thing is, like, what if GPT like knows?
Gets to that point.
So true.
That could be 2 years.
Yeah. So yeah, man, it's certainly very interesting stuff. I'll just maybe wrapping this topic up. I do want to know what the grander things could be. So whether it's for entire cities on the grid, like reduce somehow in some weird way that no human could think of, smartly reducing energy consumption by 40% or something like that.
Curing cancer, if GPT-4 can come up with that, I think that would be the pinnacle of human...
People probably would be satisfied. It's like, oh,
cancer.
It should have done this. And people get angry.
Angry reaction comments. Yeah, because you're right. Because right now, everything is either... There's like three levels to it. Just basic entertainment.
That was first.
Some level of commercial interest, and then you for the grander side of things. Mm. And I think once the decision makers, policy makers, and people really in charge understand the power of this,
I'm probably not even going to come. It's probably like going to be some team of researchers that solve some major problem. The government's like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, because you know, right now the in-camera stuff is pretty like a lot of my TikTok. Is now showing songs if they were sung by a different personality. So not personality, but different artists. Mm-hmm. So Kendrick Lamar songs being sung by Kanye West, or Kanye West song produced by Kendrick Lamar. And sometimes, you know, in the past when you're into these kind of things, sometimes you do think, oh, a collab here with that artist would fit really nicely. And the outputs that are coming out in these AI examples
also
so good.
So this is AI-generated music you're talking about?
No. Not generated music. I mean, there's some there. Yes, there are some there. But the ones that are coming up is a verse in an existing, say, Kanye song is being sung by Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, so it's the vocals.
It's the vocal synthesizers, right? Mm-hmm. But the example that you mentioned, yeah, they're AI-generated music as well. So being fed, again, going back to the Kanye example or Drake example, fitted all the music. It's got create a... example of again lyrics through ChatGPT or GPT-4, and then just basically get two and two together and create something that might sound like, you know, an artist. So Michael Jackson, again, if you want to be like, oh, what would he have sounded like today if he, I don't know, worked with The Weeknd, for example, you know, who's always kind of told that he has similarities with his voice, right? Collab feature, like imagine what that would have sounded like. Things like that. I'm very, you know, general examples, but these are the entertainment purposes that I'm seeing are quite very fascinating, and I'm enjoying them a lot.
I think we're getting back to that whole art discussion. I'm just thinking, like, if AI can make anything you want, like, imagine in 2 weeks time,
yeah,
five years time, whatever it is, where you're just like, I want a song like this with this and this, and it makes the perfect thing for you, and you're just like, I don't need to buy another song again. Yeah. And all the artists are just like, we'll beg for more food, like that's, you know.
Yeah, and I think again going back, they'll probably be making money just through events and concerts, just because if I'm just thinking, I'm kind of thinking as I'm saying, would I be satisfied if I could just generate a really cool album based on my preferences of an artist that I like?
It's like your Spotify list just gets put into like the perfect song for you or something.
Exactly. And then I said that, you know, I want John Mayer to come up with an album or Kanye to come up with an album that the ChatGPT thinks that I'd like.
Yeah.
Would I enjoy the album? I'm just trying to ask myself. Question.
But you're almost guaranteed to. It's like the algorithm, like a really good, like the TikTok algorithm or something.
Yes.
So it's almost like you almost have a resistance, but it's like, I do actually like
And I think I will. Having said that, because, and I say that only because this week, based on all the stuff that I'm getting on TikTok, I've been enjoying, even though they weren't real, but I was enjoying the collaborations or the creativity in them, even though another human came up with the prompt or whatever. But if I could do it by myself, I think I would still enjoy it, but again, that begs the question: where does that leave the artist, right? So,
I think we're going to start seeing protests. It's like ban AI. We did
with the whole DeviantArt.
We did.
Few things before we wrap up. So, just going back to the initial video that you watched about the nothing.
Oh yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah, ear to launch video. What did you think about that?
So, I have mixed feelings. So from the beginning to almost the end, I was kind of like, this is a bit try hard. But then I think Marcus Brownlee at the end saying like, or lame or whatever it was, I think that kind of saved it.
Self-actualization.
Yeah. So it was like they weren't so grandiose. It was like, oh, this is kind of a joke thing. So I thought that was all right. But then I guess like, it was cool that they didn't focus on specs and like whatever. But then I did see a review of like the Galaxy Buds, the newest ones, versus the EarPods 2 versus the Nothing phone. Sorry, Nothing Sticks. Ear 2s?
Ear 2.
But apparently it's the worst. It's the worst sounding. Noise cancellation is the worst. Mm. It's just, it's not a good headphone. So that was kind of, I was thinking about it, I was like, maybe I'll get one because like I need a good pair of wireless. But hearing that it's worse than even the EarPods, it's like,
yeah, and again, I think it's people who are going to get Apple AirPods are going to get Apple AirPods. So it's, again, getting to a market of people who would identify with what Nothing represents, right? And I think I found that the way they did this was somewhat genius in the sense that they know what their community is about. They know that the best way to generate interest is through the people who follow their work, who follow the reviewers' work, and therefore just bringing them in to this whole launch, I thought was clever.
So OnePlus, that was their DNA back in the day. So they, you know, you had the iPhones and you had the whatever. But then OnePlus came along and said, we're here for the tinkerers. You can tinker with our OS and everything. We're undercutting the price. And reviewers loved the initial OnePlus One. And that was, I remember that period distinctly because that was the phone that if you were in that YouTube sphere, watching other YouTubers, like that was the phone that people were going off about because the community was so tight. But then obviously they went off the rails. But I think with this advertisement, it's still going back to those roots.
Right.
So like, OnePlus and YouTube creators were very, in that tech community, were very tight. So I think it's still kind of the same. But I don't know, advertising is advertising. I always go to the reviews to see if it's good or not. And it's just unfortunate that it wasn't that great.
Yeah, I think the reviews, again, I've heard plenty of reviews about things that were underwhelming, but then when I used it, I found them, you know, again, it's at this point everything is very custom to the individual. So yeah, I think it just really depends on what one is after.
Maybe, but like if you're talking about noise cancellation where there's a constant hiss, like that's not great. Or if you're talking about
I haven't seen the reviews to be fair.
Okay.
But overall I think it's just talking about the advertisement itself specifically, I thought those pretty cool.
I thought
just,
it was innovative.
Even the part where he spoke Hindi, again, just he knows where his audience lies, and I think that was pretty interesting. Where
I didn't know if that was he was doing well or not.
No, apparently it was on point.
Okay, that's cool. That is cool. But yeah, I think it was very on the ground, different. Like I haven't ever seen
exactly another exactly. And like again, that says to me that he understands, or at least the company understands the community. And again, if you have to, I guess, compete against big names like Samsung, Google, Apple, you can't just go the straight route. Oh, here's the specs. Here's a really cool graphics, video, and stuff. You have to go a different route, and I think they chose the right one. Mm. But again, I think it's a young company. I think they'll slowly build on that. But again, for a very specific niche of users. A few Instagram comments. So for those who don't know, we have an Instagram profile. So just a couple here we're going to go through. Mr. Christ says, Bard versus Bing comparison, a ColdFusion video would be great on this topic.
I guess it's in a way coming, but
in some ways,
it's a very small proportion of the video.
Sunith asks, do you think AI and automation can take over jobs such as HR and customer relations?
Dude, it's over. It's a joke. Not a joke, but if you can't see it by the stage, you're left behind, because I think it's at the stage where it's like, as I said, 50% less time, 20% better output, but then those numbers will keep increasing until it can do 90% of your job and then 100%. And once it's at that point, then no question.
I think the specific angle where he's coming from is mostly to do with the human interactions, because both the roles he mentioned is HR and the other is customer relations. So if these jobs require very specific human interaction, which they do, do you see AI kind of replacing?
I see. But customer relations, though, you can just use a chatbot. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, that's already happening.
Yeah, and also even in the retail spaces, like McDonald's have their own kind of, what do you call it? Those kiosks. Mm-hmm. Everywhere else also has your self-checkout stuff. So yeah, I think slowly going out for sure. And it's going to
be I think things like healthcare, things like teaching, the two jobs that we talked about, tying it all back together. But I think things like that, that's probably irreplaceable. Like that, because you need teachers to interact with kids, and they know each kid, and you need that human element. Mm-hmm. But if that can be mimicked, who knows?
Yeah. Barry D. Z. Hop says, talk about Bitcoin and the fall of banks. We did last episode, so do check that out. Holyo Rod 97 asks, do you think privately run AI will always have an advantage versus open source AI? That's a very good question.
That is a good question. So let's see, Midjourney, open source. Mm-hmm. And then OpenAI, not so open. But yeah, that's a good question. We don't really know. I think with closed source, you're probably going to have more funding. But with open source, you're going to have the power of the crowds doing a little bit each. So probably get more crazy applications and interesting stuff. Oh, that's a really hard question. I don't know, money versus just the power of people. So I can't answer that. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think we don't have enough data point at this stage to make that call. But I think by the end of this year, ask us this question again, I think we'll have more of a definitive answer. But that's the end of the show.
All right. Well, thanks, guys, for sticking around. Hope you enjoyed that one. Action-packed, as usual. So we'll see you again soon for the next one. Cheers, guys. Have a good one.